Well, the 2010 World Cheese Championship is going on right now in Madison, and that's probably one of the great reasons we are able to get our next guest. Max McCallman of New York is a judge at the event at the Monona Terrace, and he is currently the dean of curriculum and maître fromager at the Artisanal Premium Cheese Center in New York. He's the author of a couple of popular books, The Cheese Plate and A Cheese, A Connoisseur's Guide to the World's Best. He's also author of this new book, Mastering Cheese, Lessons for Connoisseurship from a Maître Fromager. It's published by Clarkson Potter Random House, and really pleased to have him with us today to talk about cheese. And he can help us demystify it. If you have a chance to take a look at his book, you're going to find a lot of great information. He's going to talk with us about that, certainly. And he'll take your questions about cheese as well. And there are lots of different things that we can talk about. Buying it, taking it home, putting together cheese tastings. We can talk about the artisan cheesemakers in the country. He knows a lot of them. And I'm really pleased to have him with us. If you would like to join in with a question, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'd love to have you participate. Max McCallman, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. My pleasure.
The World Cheese Championships, just let's talk about that for a minute. You're a judge for it. How's that contest shaping up this year?
It's a record number of entries, 2,300 plus entries into competition with 15 pairs of judges from not just the United States, but also from Argentina, Italy, France, Switzerland, Germany, England, and so it's a broad-based grouping of judges. And the assumption is that we can judge cheeses that we may not be that familiar with, for example. And but that's part of the joy. Part of the experience is having a chance to work with someone else who might not know that family of cheese that well either. Mm-hmm. But but there are some basic things that we look for in cheeses. We look for balance and texture and good packaging, and appearance counts for something, but ultimately it's the flavor in the mouth that matters.
Well, Jim Packard was letting me know that we had a couple of Wisconsin folks who have already we have some preliminary winners here. I know Sid Cook.
Oh, yes, yes.
Of Carr Valley has won something, and John Itry of Edelweiss Creamery in Monticello, I believe, is also one for a Havarti. So when you judge cheeses, you don't necessarily judge the cheese that you're most familiar with, from the sound of it.
Precisely. One thing that I was mentioning to someone on my way over to the studio was that whatever's been done to milk has already been done. A cheese should have a pleasing flavor. That may seem obvious, but there are some cheeses that are entered into competitions that sometimes are a little bit wacky. And you think, well, if this is their best shot and they're going to the trouble and the expense of sending a cheese into a competition and the cheese is either too acid or too salty or it's flabby or whatever, it makes you wonder I think for many cheesemakers, what they like to have is some feedback from the judges so they can improve their cheeses. It's not just to win the awards, but also to find out what things we would recommend to help them make a better cheese. So, and if it's a type of cheese that we don't know so well, it's, like I say, whatever's been done to milk has been done, so you have a pretty good idea of certain steps that could be taken that could improve it.
My experience here in Wisconsin, at least, is that for our artisan cheeses, we've, over the last several years, I think we've developed some pretty darn good cheesemakers.
Oh, that's precisely, yes, and across the United States. In a down economy, last year in Austin for the American Cheese Society conference, we thought there'd be a little bit of a drop-off in the number of entries, but actually that was a record, 1,327 cheeses for the American Cheese Society competition. And I used to, years ago, I thought maybe I can skip this year because because it's going to be about the same. But now it's anytime I have a chance to taste what's out there, I say this is something to check because the improvements in cheese making here, not only in Wisconsin but across the United States, every state in the union, including Hawaii and Alaska, has an artisan cheesemaker, at least one. And so the quality is improving dramatically. We are at world-class standards in cheese making now. The excitement in cheese making, I think, is in the United States. I would like to think that this could be an export commodity, a more important export commodity to help offset our trade deficit. But I think but there's some issues there.
I would guess so. What's the reason for the improvement in the quality? Is it just experience? And
I think part of this follows our appreciation of wine in this country, and Americans being fairly well-traveled over the past 30 years. They've been exposed to other foods, cheeses included, and so they know that that it's a processed cheese has its place, but with all the resources and with the good work ethic and with the good water supplies and good soils and all that we should be able to make superior cheeses here. And so this is, I think the demand is there. And so we like to say that a rising tide raises all ships. And sure. So the competitions, the World Cheese Awards, the American Cheese Society Conference, American Dairy Goat Association Awards, and sometimes there are more local competitions, do raise the bar for cheesemakers. And the judges, not just American judges, but judges brought in from Europe or other places that have a longer history of cheesemaking. And so they can pinpoint details in cheeses or characteristics that could be considered flaws.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your book, which is fascinating. It's called Mastering Cheese is the primary title. And maybe you can explain to our listeners what all you've got in. You've got a lot in this book.
My editor, after seeing the success of my first two books, asked me if I would like to write a book entitled Mastering Cheese, based a little bit on one of the series that we teach at the Artisanal Cheese Center in New York City. And we have a master intensive series that is not limited to professionals or people in the industry, but it's open to the public or enthusiasts. Retailers or whomever. And so the idea of writing a book entitled Mastering Cheese, I thought, well, sure, that sounds like fun, but how many years do I have to write it? And what's my budgeted word count? And I was given 15 months and 300,000 words, and I exceeded the word count by about 150,000 words. And also the time, my deadline, I exceeded my deadline by about 3 months, but I had to pare it back down to fit it into closer to 300,000 words. But if it's a title like Mastering Cheese, all the studies, the history, the science, the botany, the chemistry, the pairings, the storage, the what to expect in a restaurant, the pasteurization debate, characteristics, organizations, and how to pair cheese with beer. All these things seem to be fairly important and things that people would want to find in a book that says it's about mastering cheese.
Yeah. And it's hard to do in 300,000 words.
It certainly is, but it's, and then having to cut back, I'd say about 30% of what I turned in was very painful. Yeah. But maybe I have to start on another book.
Mastering Cheese Part 2. Max McAlmon, our guest today, who is the author of Mastering Cheese. He's also the author of The Cheese Plate and Cheese, A Connoisseur's Guide to the World's Best. Really pleased to have him with us today as we talk cheese. And we'll invite your questions and comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, let's just talk about some basic things here, just buying cheese and taking it home, and you've got a whole section on that. And for most of us, we don't have the a 100th of the experience that someone like, or a 1,000th of the experience of someone like you, certainly, or a 1,000,000th.
Well, here in Wisconsin, I would expect that there's some better familiarity with fine cheeses than in most states in the country. Certainly, there are some things that I often recommend with buying cheese, and that is that you don't buy too much because a little bit goes a long way. Because cheese is a living food, I recommend that people buy less, but buy often, and leave the ripening of the cheese to the experts, because not very many of us have our own cheese maturing conditions that are ideal for maturing a cheese. It's like buying fish. You don't buy fish for 2 weeks from now. You buy fish for tonight or tomorrow, and I recommend that. Not quite that immediate for cheese, but try not to store cheese on your own.
And I want to continue with that thought, but we'll just take a quick look at the news and weather, and we'll be back again with Max McAlmon of New York, author of Mastering Cheese, Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking great cheeses today, our artisan cheeses, with Max McAlmon of New York, our America's preeminent expert on cheese. He has a new book out. It's called Mastering Cheese. And I'm telling you, it's a fascinating read, and I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. He has obviously a lot of knowledge about, knows a lot about cheeses, and I hope you'll join in if you have some questions for him, or when you have some questions for him. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And every one of our phone lines is right now packed, so let's go to the phones. And Gary in Westby, we turn to you first. Gary, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, or afternoon, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. What can we do for you?
I'm not a wine drinker. I'm not a beer drinker. I'm a coffee drinker. And I've experienced in the last couple of years some really great combinations of cheese and coffee, especially the Central American coffees. And I encountered a couple of years ago a goat milk Gouda that was just fabulous with coffee. And I'm just wondering if Max might have some comments about how, you know, pairing cheese with something besides wine and beer.
All right.
Yep. Yes, I'm a big coffee drinker myself. I can't say that I'm not a wine drinker or a beer drinker, but I do like my coffee in the morning. I like a dark, rich, fresh roasted, fresh ground espresso with a little honey stirred into it. But the best start of the day is a little fresh fruit, a little coffee, and some cheese, and you're good to go for hours. And when I heard the question about what kinds of cheeses work especially well with coffee, the Dutch Gouda or Gouda styles of cheeses are delectable with coffee. And so it doesn't have to be goat, but even the much more familiar with cow versions are great with coffee too. And then the second second best pairing, I think, for coffee, and especially at the start of the day in the morning when you want to keep your tummy fairly settled, I would say would be a goat's milk cheese, and hopefully a smooth, well-balanced goat's milk cheese, not a blue goat. There are a few of those out there. But the goat Gouda that you're talking about would make a great match. There are other mild goat's milk cheeses that I think are very easy on the tummy and just dissolve into that coffee in your tummy. And then with a little fruit, you have your nutrition to last you for hours.
Thank you for calling, Maria in Wabasha. We turn to you next. Hi, Maria.
Hi there, you guys. I have a question. I am an amateur. I just love cheese. And my question is, how is that you can make a cheese different from other? I know there's different strains of bacteria or cultures that you use, but can you walk us through the process of making a different cheese? How is that Camembert will be different from a cheddar? And how would you get to make them different? That's pretty much the question.
Wow. Yeah, that's a loaded question right there. There's so many things that can influence the way a cheese tastes, smells, feels, and looks from the animal. Not only the animal, but the breed of the species or the combination of animal types, what they're eating, what time of year, what the vegetation is that they have to choose from. So just the milk itself, even though milk in a milking parlor, oftentimes the differences between, for example, a difference between a goat's milk and a sheep or a cow milk, it may not seem to be that different one from the other until you make a cheese from it exactly the same way. And so you're using the same process with the same kinds of molds, bacteria, yeast, and the amount of pressing or how fine you cut the curd how much heat, the microflora that are in your cheese-making room that can influence the flavor. And so it's very difficult to replicate a cheese outside of its the same way, outside of its original plant. The milk is the critical factor. The amount of moisture that remains in the cheese, the amount of salt that goes into the cheese. If the milk is acidified by the enzymes that are in the milk itself, or if there are some cultures that are added that come from somewhere else, perhaps a factory in Europe, that can influence the flavor dramatically. And when you do coagulate the milk with the rennet type, what you use to separate the milk into its curd and whey will strongly influence the flavor. If it's a traditional animal rennet, which is the type that is oldest and the type that is used has been used mostly, that will give a different flavor profile than a cheese that is made from milk that has been coagulated using a plant rennet or some sort of microbial rennet. That will certainly influence the flavor. And then once the curd has started to form, how you cut the curd. And do you cut it very fine to make a hard cheese? Do you cut it very, very in big chunks to make a softer cheese? How do you press it? Now, when you scoop the curds and put it into a mold, the shape of the mold can influence the flavor too. And then the curing room where you put the young cheese, is the young cheese given a bath? Is it given many baths? Is it are there some molds that are inoculated into the cheese, into the vat itself, or are they sprayed onto the cheese afterwards? There are so many variables that go into cheese making. It's no wonder that we have so many cheese types out there. And this is one of the joys of being in a competition like this with 2,300 entries into this World Cheese Award competition here in Madison. And to think this is only a fraction of what's out there. And even within these families of cheeses, there are certain attributes that you look for in a provolone, for example. But some of them may not have the texture, or they might not have the salt content. So there's a lot. It's fun, interesting.
It is, and you talk about this in your part of your book. You certainly deal with this in the earlier part of your book.
Right. One thing that I also want to make sure that people know is that cheese, the reason why you love cheese, by the way, is, as I like to say, is because cheese loves you. And if you love it, then it's probably good for you.
Right. All right. Thanks again, Maria, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Williams Bay. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. And hello, Max. I would like to know if you can freeze cheese. I bought several packages of Gouda that was at the best use date and was on sale.
Yeah.
And I put it in my freezer because she said I could freeze it. But this is the first time I've tried to do this.
Okay, what do you think, Max?
It's perfectly acceptable for a drier, hard cheese, if it's an aged Gouda or Gouda. The cheese should not suffer very much. Sheep's milk is a type of milk that does not suffer with freezing. As a matter of fact, because the ewe will only give you milk with which you can make cheese for about 6 months out of the year, many sheep milk cheese makers will, when they have extra milk, they'll freeze some and make it into cheese later in the year. But so that they have a steady flow of cheeses available to satisfy the market and keep that money coming into the dairy. But for a harder cheese, those cheeses they can put up with freezing. The biggest problem with freezing is that the moisture can be lost, and you might. The texture can suffer in the cheese. The flavor should not suffer too much, but the texture is one of the biggest problems with freezing cheese.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Joan. And Susan in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Susan.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, years ago, there used to be a type of cheese called Liederkranz, and I haven't seen it, and when I've asked for it, people have told me that the culture was lost. I believe it was made in Ohio, and people have said there was a fire. People have said that they had to change facilities, and I'm really wondering if there's anything similar to that or if it's being made at all.
It's not the same thing. What is out there is not at all the same thing. There something that is closer to what you the Liederkranz. There are quite a few, actually. Not that many that are quite like it. Quite like what it was here in the United States. But there's some cheeses from Austria and from Switzerland that have that intensity, that aromatic quality, and that flavor. I talk a little bit about that in the stinky cheese chapter in my book because they're delicious and chock full of conjugated linoleic acid, a naturally occurring antioxidant, cancer fighter, so good for you, satisfying.
Oh, thank you for calling. And by the way, we have some open lines finally again, so we can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Mary in Galena, Illinois, you're next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm really enjoying listening this morning.
Thank you.
I lived in Germany for 3 years, and we, the whole family came to love aged Gouda. It had a great strong flavor, nice crumbly texture, and these fun little crystals in it. And since moving back to the States, I found that this is so hard to get a hold of. Wondering if your guest has any suggestions about kinds of cheeses that might substitute well for that, or even where to look for this aged Gouda. There's smoked Gouda all over the place, but it's just not the same thing.
Right, right. That type of cheese is available in the United States, and so there are. If you don't find that cheese at the place where you buy your cheese. There are some places online where you can find an aged Gouda or Gouda.
Uh-huh.
And usually to get that kind of texture, the cheese should have at least a couple of years of age. Better if it has 4 years of age. Beyond 5 years of age, I don't see much improvement, but there are some aged Goudas available. That crystalline texture, by the way, one reason why you like that is because that is an indication that the proteins in the cheese have undergone proteolysis and broken down these proteins into a very important amino acid, the building block of all the protein chains of which we are composed, called tyrosine, the root word of tyrosine being the Greek word for cheese, tyros. And when tyrosine is a marvelous amino acid, it is also a precursor to melanin that gives our hair and its skin its color, and it protects our skin from harmful rays. And it's a It also tends to satisfy us, and it makes us happy. It is a precursor to norepinephrine and epinephrine and dopamine. And so as soon as you have those little crystals in your mouth from that age good, it sends a little signal up into the olfactories, up to the olfactory bulb, and it just says, wow, I'm happy. And sure enough, you are.
Yeah. That's why I think those are fun little crystals.
Oh, yeah.
They are. Thank you, Mary. Oh, we have several emails. How do you know when a cheese goes bad?
Short answer is when it doesn't taste good. I don't like to reject any cheese just upon its appearance. I might be a little wary of a cheese that has the smell of a carcass. But if it has a little bit of that baby diaper aroma, it may just be screaming to be eaten. A trace of ammonia is a natural byproduct of the degradation of the enzymes that are found in cheese. And so just because there is a whiff of ammonia in a cheese is not something to necessarily avoid. If it looks a little beat up, it could be okay. But if it's an aged, somewhat of an aged cheese that has some big cracks in it and has some unusual colors, some pinks and yellows and greens in it. I'm not talking about a green as in a blue-green cheese, but that could be an indication that you're going to have a bad experience in the mouth. Cheese enjoys a stellar track record for food safety. It is the safest food you can put into your mouth because it starts off with mammalian milk, which is like manna from heaven, and it has a little bit of salt in it, and it's also a little bit acid. This tends to thwart pathogenic contamination. So if you're in good health, if you are not compromised, and if you're not too weak or too young or too old, I'd like to try any cheese. I recommend trying cheese and at least a nibble because, it is safer than fruits and vegetables.
Let's turn to John in Port Edwards. John, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a great lover of the blue cheeses, the mold. Could you comment on maybe the differences in which you prefer of the Stilton, Roquefort, Gorgonzola, mm-hmm. blue cheese, goat milk blue cheese?
I'd add sheep milk blue cheese to that. I just tried some this past weekend, and it was magnificent.
Yeah, and to Larry's point, with sheep's milk cheeses, one reason why we like sheep's milk cheeses a lot is because sheep's milk it just has more protein. It has more vitamin B2, vitamin B12. Sheep's milk is the first of the dairy animal whose milk was harvested, but such as Roquefort. Roquefort is a sheep's milk blue. One of the problems that I have with Roqueforts is that they tend to be oversalted and they can be a little out of balance. I like a good Stilton, but I think that a Roquefort can always follow a Stilton because not necessarily because of the salts. There are a few Roqueforts and also some sheep's milk blues being produced here in the United States that are lovely, and they have the sweetness. This is one quality that I look for. Not just that little bit of salt, and not too much, but a sheep's milk blue should have a good component of salt. The goat's milk blues, there are not very many of them. There's one that is on the cover of my new book. It's called Blaue Geiss. And it looks very scary. When I first saw it, I thought I can't wait to try it because it looks like your brain on drugs. When I tasted it, actually, it was lovely, and the finish was excellent. So there are a few goat's milk blues, Gorgonzolas. There are some good ones. They can be sweet and buttery and rich. I've often said about Roquefort, Roquefort is a hard act to follow. If you have a good Roquefort, all Roqueforts are unpasteurized. And once you've had a good Roquefort in the mouth, the only thing left is sex. There's nowhere else to go in a cheese after a good Roquefort.
Thank you, John, for calling. And Shelley and Wanakee, on to you. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I grew up down in Illinois, and used to go with my family to this great little butcher shop in a tiny little town, and they had a cheese there that they called Herkimer cheese. I can't find it, and I'm searching for it. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about where it can be found.
I don't know the cheese. Is that spelled H-E-R-K-E-M-E-R?
And you know what? I don't even know that. I've tried to Google, you know, different variations of the spelling.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was something that was made locally.
Probably a local cheese named after the company.
Yeah,
well,
perhaps.
That's a guess.
That's there are just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cheeses that are out there. I certainly don't know them all. Even if I tasted a dozen new cheeses every day, I would never be able to taste all the ones that are out there. For one thing, they change all the time. But it sounds a little bit like the name of a cheese that is produced in Belgium. I don't know that that's it. It's only a two-syllable name. It's not Herkimer. And I don't see that cheese in the United States these days. Yeah, but buying local is a good thing to do. If you have access to the cheese maker himself or herself, you have that interplay, that exchange with the cheese maker that gives them the feedback, and they see the look on your face when you taste the cheese, and you can give them the comment, and they can give you a little of the romance of how the cheese is made. But buying local is a great thing to do. For one thing, you don't have that many hands or that many people touching the cheese, and hopefully you get a little bit better price by buying, like at a farmer's market is a great place to buy cheese, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Shelley, for calling. Appreciate it. And Matt in Richland Center, let's turn to you. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Larry.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm a dairy farmer, and I kind of got into making cheese on a small scale here, just playing around with it, and I love it, and it's a lot of fun. But when I got to looking into getting licensed, it looks like, from what other people say, this is the hardest place in the world, Wisconsin, to get your cheesemaker's license and go about this. What's your advice? You know, what state or where? I mean, I don't know that I want to move, but...
Yeah.
Well, it is, and so you're having fun with it, and that's not what I hear from too many starting cheesemakers, that it's a lot of fun. Some people go into it thinking it's going to be romantic and it's going to be easy, and but it is a lot of work. And if you've been doing it a little bit, then you seem to be up for that. But Wisconsin is pretty strict. And for good reason, because they want to protect the industry. Because if anything did go wrong with cheese, then it doesn't just hurt you, but it hurts the entire industry. And so this is another reason why cheese enjoys this great track record for food safety, is because they watch out for each other. And everyone better be making sure that everything is clean. There is a saying in the cheese world that cheese making, about 90% of the work of being a cheesemaker is cleaning up. And you can use raw or pasteurized milk. That is not so much the issue as it is making sure that everything that happens to that cheese after it's made, everything is very sanitary, including the people that are handling your cheese. So, Wisconsin protects its industry very well. And surrounding states, I don't know that it would be much...
Different.
Much different on that note.
And I thank you very much for calling, Matt. Appreciate your call. And Max, thank you so much. Boy, the time flew by here. I really appreciate you being with us today. And your book, I love your book. So we've got three parts to it. So it's Understanding Cheese is part one, I believe. Part two is Becoming a Connoisseur in many ways, and then a third part is on the great artisan cheese makers and cheeses. And thank you so much for coming to Wisconsin and for being on the show. Appreciate
Thanks, Larry.
It.
I enjoyed it.
Max McCallman is author of Mastering Cheese. It's published by Clarkson Potter Random House, and you're going to really enjoy this book. I can highly recommend
it. I was going to say, and it's a bargain at twice the price, too.
Yeah, all right.
$40 on, yeah, if you buy from a retailer. Right.
Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.